Some mysteries in black and white. We two hosts, Josh and Ed.
Hello,
Ed. Question for you.
Yep.
What is? I don't know if I've asked this one before or not, but yeah. What is the scariest film you've ever watched?
Thing is, I don't really get scared from films, but no. I mean, because I watch them from a very young age.
Like, yeah,
I probably
yeah.
shouldn't have. But nah, I mean, no, I'm done, is it? I think the only film that's ever gave me a nightmare. It's probably The Grudge.
Yeah.
It's the bit where it's out on a CCTV camera and she like crawls in and it goes black, then her eyes open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That bit creeped me the fuck out.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing, that only film that's actually gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
What about you?
Again, I think it's because I was young. It freaked me out. It was the original Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
her... The sister, the one that's apparently died from spinal meningitis when she's coming back and she's just all fucked and everything like that. I remember that creeping me out when I was little.
Yeah.
Till I watched it ages ago. Or yeah. no, not that long ago, and I realised it's a man
yeah.
dressed as a woman. Yeah, that is it.
Yeah.
But obviously, because you're a kid, you don't realise that. You're just fucking terrified.
No, you
terrified.
Get sucked into it.
Yeah, like exactly.
Yeah.
But no, today, we, as we mentioned on the last podcast episode, we are going to be talking about a specific game.
A
video game.
Yeah. We're talking about Farming Simulator. No, of course not. Of course not. Yeah, we're talking about a very... I would say it's quite a famous game now.
No, I would.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely is. Yeah.
And my wife is obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely obsessed with it. Like, I think she wanted to be on here.
Yeah.
Doing it. But I think because of the pregnancy and everything, like, she just feels a bit... Blah.
Yeah. So she's not. That's fair enough.
But that's Dead by Daylight. And it's annoying because I'm not a gamer.
No.
And I'd never play it. But I love it.
Yeah. I know
if
what you
that
mean.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because it's a game about like killers, kind of like monsters, because they look a bit fucked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Some of them, well, most of them.
Yeah.
So it like it resonates with me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started bringing in like actual
like movie killers and things
like
that.
Michael Myers and Ghostface and that. But we're not going to talk about them.
No, because we've talked about them a fair bit.
Yeah, about like actual like the movie killers and that. And there's so much you could say about them, really.
Yeah, exactly. If you've watched the films, you know about them. So yeah, it's like, what's the point of going over them again?
Yeah, exactly. But if you want to know more about them, we done a video at Halloween time.
Yes, we did, yeah.
About, what was it? Tier List.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tier List. So, give it a watch.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a true fan, you should have already watched it.
Exactly.
But no, just quickly off the bat, for those that don't know, basically Dead by Daylight is a game where it's like a group of people, it's an online game,
mm-hmm.
a group of people basically have to start these generators up to unlock the doors to get out of this like sort of secluded area where the killer's chasing you. Basically, one person plays the killer, and basically he's just got to go around and kill, chop up everybody else. And
usually, I think it's like four. It's usually like four survivors.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
And yeah, so it's basically just like who wins first. You know, do the survivors get out, or does the killer get them all? Basically,
pretty much.
But like you said, the killers, they've got such unique appearances, each and every one of them, and I think I'm pretty sure they've got like unique abilities as well.
Yes, yeah, like have different perks,
yeah, and things
I
like that.
I don't know stuff about that.
No,
that's what I mean. It'd have been ideal to have Courtney on here,
yeah.
She'd be like, bang,
we wouldn't be talking, it'd just be bang, 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 bang.
Nah, it'd be Courtney's podcast, but and Courtney actually has her own, like, she has a TikTok, of course, but because she used to stream before she got like pregnant and everything, which is Rage Like Courts, because I've heard it plenty of times. That girl can rage.
I've heard it a couple.
That girl can rage. And it's funny as hell. So if you can, check out Rage Like Quartz on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's got some good videos on there. But yeah, it's annoying because she's got like loads of fucking likes on
there. Yeah.
And she puts no effort in. Yeah. I'm joking, sweetheart. I'm joking. Please don't kill me. Oh, she will.
But no, today we're going to be talking basically, like I said, about the original killers of the game.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking basically about the lore of them.
Mm.
Those who don't know lore, basically the backstory.
Yeah, that's why I think that's why what I love about them is that they gave them a backstory. They gave them a lore
because it's not just like here's an ugly bastard, he's going to kill you.
Yeah, pretty much. They put some meat.
Yeah, exactly.
Substance to it. Yeah, I really enjoy that about them.
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna see how many we can get through. Some lores might be a bit longer than others. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah,
but no, without further ado. Let's crack on.
So the OG of Dead by Daylight is a character called Trapper. And Trapper's real name is Evan McMillan. He idolised his father. It wasn't just that he was heir to a good fortune. It was the way he ran the estate. Raised under his firm hand, Evan had taken to running the workforce with an iron hand. Production was always high and the McMillan estate prospered under father and son. As Archie McMillan's mental health slowly disintegrated, Evan protected him from the herd, who wanted a piece of the fortune. No matter what his father asked of him, Evan would do. When Archie McMillan finally snapped, Evan became his enforcer in what would become known as the worst mass murder in modern history. They never proved that Evan led over 100 men into those dark tunnels before detonating the explosives and sealing them to their fate. The tale of the McMillan estate is a tale of wealth and power gone very wrong. How many victims fell to the hands of father and son is unknown. No record is ever made of what became of Evan McMillan. His father is another unsolved puzzle, found trapped in the locked basement of his own warehouse, starved and abandoned.
Mate, that's mad. That's like, he's done all that for his... Do you know what I mean? It's like, lured 100 people into a cave and detonated it. It's like, yeah, say less, Dad.
Yeah.
I got your brother.
Yeah, pretty much. But with that, in the game, he has a weapon. The main weapon is a cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
The cleaver is a primary weapon of the Trapper, a brutal cleaver hammered by his own hands from the metals of the mine. And he also uses... as the name suggests, bear traps,
mm-hmm.
which he would put down. I think as he could put down so many at a time, and then when the survivors run into him, it closes them up, it keeps them there, or edges them in some way,
yeah,
and it lets them know where they are.
Yeah,
much.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the bear. That's the Trapper.
Yeah. All right. So the next one we got. Is Philip Ojomo, or as he's more commonly known, the Wraith.
Mm.
Okay, just give me a sec. Got to get to his lore. Where is he? Here we go. Okay, so Philip Ojomo came to this country without anything than hope for a new beginning. He was happy after he got offered a job at Auto Haven Wreckers, a small scrapyard where bribed cops turned a blind eye for somewhat shady business that took place. Ojomo didn't care. He had seen criminal activity up close in his homeland, and as long as he didn't get involved, he let things be. He just fixed cars and handled the crusher. Something he did really well. A car went in, and a small metallic cube came out. It was not until one gloomy day that he, just by accident, saw some blood coming from one of the uncrushed cars. As he opened the truck, he found a young man gagged and tied with tied hands and panic-filled eyes. Ojomo freed the man, who managed to run 10 feet before Ojomo's boss stopped him and slit his throat. As Ojomo demanded answers, he got explained to him that he'd been nothing more than a simple executioner, as more or less every car had a soul in them, as this was a service that Scrapyard provided to certain clients. Ojomo snapped and went ballistic. He threw his boss in the crusher and let it slowly compress as his head stuck out. Ojomo grabbed it and pulled the head and spine out of the body. He then left and was never seen again.
Who's he, his fucking predator?
So, again, I'm pretty sure they're all going to be fucked up, but you know what I mean? This geezer's literally just trying to get about his daily life.
Yeah.
And then, but I like that, though, where it's like, they offer this service to provide, like, provided for certain clients.
Yeah, mafia.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
But, that's the most mafia thing I've ever heard in my life.
The only downside is I wish it went a bit more how he went insane.
Yeah, he went insane.
Do you know what I mean? Because how's he gone from just a normal guy crushing up cars to this fucked up geezer?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But his...
I thought that was a trapper. I thought there was going to be a bit more.
Here we go. Okay, so he uses a weapon that is called Azarov's Skull. Azarov's Skull was the primary weapon of Wailing Bell. The teeth of death lie on Azarov's skull and spine. Oh shit, so is that the head, like the spine head of Matey Boy that he fucked up? Yeah. Ah, that's pretty cool.
And he has a bell.
Yeah, the Wraith, a heavy cast iron belt imbued with ancient powers allows the user to enter and walk the spirit world when rung.
Yeah, it makes him go invisible.
Yeah.
It's called, he calls him Bing Bong.
Bing Bong.
Or Bing Bong Boy.
Man, like Bing Bong Boy. Fuck's sake. So yeah, that was the Wraith.
And now we've got the Hillbilly. And I think when they made this character, I don't think they thought it was going to be as big as it did.
Right.
Because obviously, as time went on, they got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they got Bubba. So I do think the Hillbilly is meant to be like their version.
Yeah.
This is from a Benedict Baker's journal in 1896 on the Hillbilly. A most terrible man to behold. His physique is all twisted and disfigured, as if by some awful accident. He carries a deadly and cruel chainsaw, which he wields with devastating violence, seemingly imbuing him with a superhuman speed for a while. His advantage is also a weakness, as the loud noise can give away his position. So I have tried to heighten my sense of sound, honing in on any sound that is not stemming from nature. Let's get into the law. The son of wealthy landowners, Max Thompson Sr. and Evelyn Thompson, this unnamed boy was an unwanted child born to savage parents. Hideously disfigured, he was shut away from society. So ashamed of their son, they bricked him off in a room and fed him through a hole in the wall. When the boy escaped, he took his revenge savagely and terribly, slaughtering the parents that had tortured him instead of raising him. After the deed was done, he continued to live his life at the farm, taking out his deranged violence on the animals that were allowed to run free.
Aww.
As he finally broke free from his shackles, he ran through the cornfields, chasing and slaughtering whatever he could find. They never found the bodies of Max and Evelyn, but they did find tortured, disemboweled animals all over the farm. Cold Wind Farm was quickly settled and the land split up and sold off. There was never a buyer for the farmhouse. Perhaps it was the sound of the chainsaw you could hear throughout those hot summer nights.
Yeah, so it's...
You know what I mean?
They've added their own spin on it,
yeah,
which is fair play.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you can definitely tell that he's got the origins of Bubba.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, and as well, because of the weapons. Like, obviously, there's a chainsaw, but there's also the hammer.
And if anyone
has seen the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's when the slider door opens, he has that big club hammer, cracks Matey on the head and drags him in.
Mm-hmm.
But the hammer is the primary weapon of the Hillbilly. The cattle hammer deals a sharp blow to the skull as the most effective manner of slaughter. And of course he has a chainsaw. That's his power, but secondary weapon later.
Yeah.
A hulking and deadly chainsaw of terrified strength grinds through flesh, bone and soul. Once revved up, it sends its user to a violent frenzy. And I think also with chainsaw, like he just sprint.
Right. As well. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got it. Gives him that bit of extra oomph. That was good. That was sick. But no, out of them three at the minute, who's your favourite?
It's got to be the first one,
Trapper.
Yeah. I just wish there was more on the one we just done, Wraith.
Yeah.
Because he, do you know what I mean? That literally just turned from. Oh, he was basically just a normal 9-to-5 guy. Now he's a killer.
Yeah.
Why? obviously you'll know why.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's pretty
cool
that he uses his head and thing. But,
how he went descended to madness.
If it went a bit more into that, he'd be my favourite so far.
Yeah, I think we could. Thing is, like I say we could do a series. We're not very good with series.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
We just don't enjoy them.
No.
But it would be. If we find a killer that we do like, we could probably try and go a bit more in depth on it, see if there's any more extra lore.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
And as well, you've got to think there'll probably be like fan fiction and stuff like that.
Yeah. That might be good for a reacts if we can find something.
Oh, I don't know, because it might get messed up, like a survivor shagging one of the killers and stuff.
That is a point, yeah. All right, so the next one we have is Sally Smithson, or The Nurse. A new variant has entered the arena. I spotted her as she somehow moved through a wall, clad in bandages that tell an untold tale of something horrid. This nurse, as it seems, brings me a new angst during my lonely nights as my mind runs amok.
One thing, actually, before we go to it, I'd love it if they'd done like a series.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
I mean, thing is, because Courtney plays that game so much, I think I'd get bored of the game.
Well, when the series comes out.
No, the actual game.
Yeah, because obviously it is. But then again, I was about to say it's so repetitive, but so many of the common games are.
Yeah.
Look at FIFA, look at Call of Duty, they're so repetitive.
Yeah, I'll get that. Yeah, true.
I mean, obviously, personally, I probably would get bored.
Mm.
But I still think the game would.
I think I'd enjoy it if I was the killer. If I was playing just the killer all the time.
Yeah.
I think I'd enjoy that more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is more. It's that fun of the hunt kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so the nurse's lore. Sally Smithson came to town with dreams of children's feet, and laughter in a wooden home.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I get it. Yeah. She hasn't just got a fetish for kids' feet.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I nearly made me gag. Oh. Fucking hell. That's made my eyes water and everything. Fucking wrap up, boy.
Yeah. She came to dreams with children's feet and laughter in a wooden home built by her husband, Andrew. But life came not with smiles, but with plans of destruction. Andrew worked as a lumberjack, a job with its perils. One day, Andrew's foreman had to pay Sally a visit, forever changing her life. She was alone. Without food on the table and no other option, Sally had to find a way. But the only employment she could get was at the Crofters Pren Asylum. Nobody sought employment there unless they were in dire need, just like Sally. Without any education, she started at the bottom during the hard night shift. Over the years, her mind had reached its limits. Two decades after seeing horrid things that violate the eyes, memories that are replayed every night, being abused verbally and physically by people without limits, Sally saw insanity from the outside just to catch it herself. Finally, she could not take it anymore, and concepts of purification emerged inside her. She did what she felt was necessary. As the morning staff arrived one day in September, they found over 50 dead patients, lifeless, in their bed, along with four staff members, also dead. Only Sally had survived the night, but her mind was gone, rocking back and forth non-stop. Exactly what happened is only known by her, but it seemed that some of them had been choked as they had marks around their necks. They got her into an ambulance, but that ambulance never reached the hospital. It was found crashed in a nearby wood, all of the staff dead, and Sally nowhere to be found. I think she's got the best lore so far, you know.
Yeah, I think as more killers we go into, I think their laws get more and more detailed.
Yeah.
No, that was sick. Yeah. The weapons.
Oh yeah, shit. Sorry, my bad.
Come on, Josh. Get with the fucking program.
Weapons are.
Hang on, go on.
Oh, yeah. Her main weapon is the bone saw. The bone saw is the primary weapon of the nurse. Rusty metal implement for tearing through flesh and bone. And her power is Spencer's last breath. A power and violent last breath snatched from Crotus Pren Asylum warden Patrick Spencer. Channeling its energy allows the nurse to pierce and jump through the spirit world in a blink multiple times in a row. Doing so leaves her in a state of fatigue.
Cooking up.
So that'll explain why she goes through walls and shit.
Mm. But I must say, like, the designs of these killers.
Oh yeah, they're brilliant.
Unbelievable.
I'll put pictures up as we go through them, but
yeah. Like, honestly, whoever designed these characters, hats off to.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because they are sick. Absolutely sick. And the next one we're doing is Lisa Sherwood, otherwise known as the Hag.
Hag.
A new terror stalks the darkness. Her appearance struck me as more intense than the others after but a glimpse of her haggard silhouette. Twisted and torn in unspeakable ways, with greyish dead skin stretched over her emaciated body, her arm is a horrid, overgrown deformity capable of slashing through bone and flesh alike. Her very presence speaks of endless torture similar to mine. I wonder, did she refuse the entity's calling until broken, or did she wish for this? Mm. Like that first little bit, sick, you know what I mean? Yeah. But she's all like, what's this? Hang on, sorry. No. Lisa Sherwood grew up in a quiet village, mainly isolated from the rest of civilization. The people of the hamlet were kind, and the elders kept old traditions alive, often keeping the peace by personally settling the ever-rare disputes. Lisa was particularly fond of the charms they taught her to draw for safety and good fortune. One night, as she was walking home through the woods, a terrible storm struck without warning. Howling winds whipped at her hair as she stumbled through the swamp, her rain-drenched dress plastered to her skin. In the slick, wet mud, she lost her footing, careening backwards and striking her head against rock. Slipping in and out of consciousness, she strained to identify the dark shapes approached her from between the trees. That's the last thing she could remember. Her kidnappers kept her chained to the wall in a floored cellar. Though dimly lit, she could see others whose large open wounds swarmed with flies. It took merely a day before they returned, carving chunks of the prisoners' bodies with rusted blades, consuming their very flesh down to the bone. Most she saw did not survive long once the cannibals targeted them. But somehow, deep within, Lisa persisted. Starved, infected, and mutilated after several weeks of torture, her gaunt arms become loose in their shackles. She pulled hard, the metal tearing through skin and muscle until she was free. Her flesh oozed viscous yellow pus, and bones were visible beneath gangrenous wounds. She could go no further. Delirious, she thought of home. She thought of the elders. With her dying breath, she etched the symbols that had taught her into the floor using what remained of her fingers. Almost in response, a dark hunger stirred inside her. It yearned for blood, and in oath, she chose vengeance. The villagers' search party eventually brought them to an old shack in a swamp. Inside, its previous inhabitants had been viciously dismembered and devoured by an unidentifiable animal. In the cellar, amid rotting corpses and disconnected flesh, the elders' charms were scrawled in blood on the floor. Lisa's body was not among the bodies and was never found. The village was never the same again.
That sounds very Wendigo-esque.
Yeah, I was going to say that. If anything is the Wendigo, it was that.
That's pretty sick. Mate, you just come up with these, mate. Hats off, man.
Yeah, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I can't wait for the last one.
I will give that to you.
I was going to say, I beg.
I'll give that one to you.
But her main weapon is her hand, a claw.
Mm-hmm.
The claw is the primary weapon of the hag, a horribly overgrown deformity, clawing its way through flesh and bone. And her power is blackened catalyst. The source of the hag's power, a blackened finger used as a catalyst for her terrible power. She bends and shapes mud to her will, With simple ritualistic drawings, she creates deceitful duplicates of herself made from mud and decay, which she can use for various effects.
Mm.
Honestly, like, I just love this shit.
You was on to something, though. Like, the more the killers are going on, the better the laws are getting. So, that last one.
If they could redo the first three.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think you could go a lot more in depth.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%.
Like, if Dead by Daylight, or ever, like, the people who make this, ever watch it and want people to create laws, we're your guys. I could create, look, if you give me a killer, what it looks like, and everything like that, and the thesis of one, we'll make a law for it.
Oh, that'd be sick. That'd be sick.
Should we make our own?
Fuck it, why not?
It'd be quite a fit.
That'd be good on the Hunt episode, you know?
Yeah, it would be cool.
Yeah, there you go. Coming soon.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you could think of a killer. I think of a killer.
Oh, do you know what'd be sick? If I think of a killer, it's like it's weapon and that, and you do the same, swap them, and we have to create laws for the other one.
Oh, that's a good shout, you know.
I think, there you go, on the hunt, coming soon. You got behind the scenes during an episode. Ain't you guys lucky?
Yeah.
Right, well,
we'll go more into detail once the camera's off.
Yeah,
though,
yeah.
We're going to be bouncing off the fucking walls, boy.
Well, the next one is Herman Carter, or the Doctor. I have difficulty keeping my sanity each day. This altering world provides me... Yeah, preach, brother. Each day, altering... this altering world provides me with new trials. A man wearing the robes of a doctor crossed my path from afar. I witnessed him walking around, searching, but he was not normal. His eyes and mouth pried open in a painful and disturbing way. Where do these fiends stem from? I do not trust him. He looks like he wants to bring pain, not healing. I will stay away. It is the wisest thing to do. And judging by the looks of him, yeah, you might have a point, brother. Okay, so the doctor, here he is. Okay, from an early age, Herman Carter understood the human psyche. To analyze and deconstruct something as powerful as the brain intrigued him. He was an apt pupil and gained the attention of his teachers. He excelled in high school and was published in Partisan, a psychology gazette. Within a year, Carter was fast-tracked into Yale's Advanced Neuroscience Program, really a front for the CIA. Brain power is a must if you are about to conquer the world and demolish foes across the pond. The CIA understood this, so interrogation and intelligence became their number one priority. All they needed were brilliant people, like Carter. Carter and other top-tier recruits were transferred off-campus and into a secret black site facility in Illinois known as Larry's Memorial Institute. A protege carves a mentor, and that's where Dr. Otto Stampner stepped in, who taught Carter that information is everything and knowledge is power. He was given all instruments needed, a guiding hand, and more or less everything he asked for. He never realised that sunlight had started to become so scarce that he too was kept in the dark, because knowledge doesn't only give you power, it also transforms you into a threat. Ooh, that was cold. To extract...
This mystery bar's coming soon.
To extract information was his mission. Dr. Stampner encouraged Carter to go further and not to consider that this is a normal medical facility. No eyes were watching them. There were no rules to abide. The agency just pointed Carter in the right direction, and then he started to take a few steps back as he saw how Carter would walk on his own. Docile test subjects were exchanged for real-life spies, people that played a role in the troubles outside the facility. Carter shrouded this new role. Project Awakening took its form. And on paper, Carter described it as experimental interrogation. It was approved, and over a few months, nobody knocked on his door. Screams and moans filled the corridors outside his lab. But wars skew people and what they accept. As long as the enemy is kept at bay, the fluorescent lights flickered more and more often. Electroconvulsive treatment became a standard dish on the menu. Prisoners held at the facility begged the guards to take them to any other lab but Carter's. rumours were disregarded in the beginning. Over the years, Carter became known as the Doctor, and no one ever questioned if he had, if he even held a medical certificate, or even what happened to the prisoners after they had given up their information. It was only after Larry's Memorial Institute went silent for a week that they finally uncovered the true horror of what had happened there. Carter's experimental information extraction had turned to horrific and bizarre torture. Patients and prisoners were found dead or in vegetative states with all types of head trauma in his office. They found that, oh no, of all types of head trauma. In his office, they found the most terrible discovery of all, Dr. Stamper himself. His head peeled open and an array of electrolytes and sensors inserted into his still working but annihilated brain.
Fucking hell.
There was no sign of Herman, the Dr. Carter, but his research papers suggested that he had been using the prisoners as part of an awful ECT experiment as he searched for the Panenka of mind control. The government didn't want to know. The black site was condemned and all knowledge of Larry's Memorial Institute redacted forever. Uh-huh. Well, fucking hell, he's even got more. Wait, what was that then? Oh, that's his original law. So now we've got his current law.
Fucking hell.
They've gone ham with this geezer. Showing experimental aptitude in psychology, Herman was handpicked for special training in an advanced neuroscience program located in a secret black facility in Illinois known as Lemry's Memorial Institute. Really a front for the CIA. This is where Herman met Dr. Otto Stamper, where under his guidance, Herman began to use strange and ever-increasingly vicious methods to extract information from prisoners sent to the Institute. Mm-hmm. Which was also a covert prison and re-education centre for whoever was the USA's current nemesis. His liberal use of violent electroshock therapy revealed dramatic results and several threats to the national security were uncovered. Over the years, Herman became known as the Doctor and no one ever questioned if he held... It was only after Larry's Memorial Institute went silent for a week, the personnel, patients... No, it's the exact same. I don't get why they've done that. That is the exact same.
Yeah. It's just like shortened down.
Yeah. But his weapon is the stick.
Fuck! No! Not the stick!
The stick is the primary weapon of the Doctor, an instrument of punishment when all other treatments fail. Mm. It looks like some sort of probe.
It's like a cross between a probe and Lucille.
Yeah, yeah. And his power is Carter's spark. Is it a gift or a curse? The entity has ignited a corrupted and exhaustible spark in the Doctor's heart, which allows him to generate electro-conclusive power at will. His insidious treatment corrupts the minds of those it touches. Victims shocked by the corrupt spark begin to lose their grip on reality, and with repeated exposure, inevitably succumb to madness. They've gone fucking in on this geezer.
Yeah. That's what I
mean. Jesus wept.
The more they could do it, the more they make these killers, the more they're going into it.
Yeah. It's almost like they can't stop. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They have a basis of where they're going. It's like, I can't stop typing.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's why I'd like, if they'd done a series, like each episode be like one of the, like, of the killers.
Yeah.
And they're going, and look, you could do it as like a two-parter. Like the first, like for each killer, like the first episode could be like who they were and how they became their killer.
Yeah.
And then like the second episode could be in the world where they're killing people.
Yeah.
That'd be sick. Netflix.
Hit us up. We copyright it.
Yeah, Dead by Daylight.
Fucking
Dead by Daylight hits up. We'll be your middlemen.
We'll work it out.
Gives a bit of bumps. next killer is Anna.
Big up Anna.
Also known as the Huntress. A figure clad in hair, in the head of a hare, a most disturbing sight. This new foe holds something human within her, some shards of ordinary life. She seems to be a hunter. I have met many different beings in this place, but this is the first one with a natural skill of hunting. In any other place, one could deem it a talent. but her knack of tracking, capturing, and killing is something else here. There is something else in her too. She seems to seek something.
Sounds like a female version of Kraven the Hunter.
She can't. I don't think she could speak to animals.
Well, no, but
did Kraven? No,
Kraven didn't. Well, no, yeah. He had some sort of, like, connection with
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
Spider-Man lore, for those that don't know.
I'm really looking forward to that.
What, the film?
Yeah.
Yeah. At first, when he was... is Aaron Taylor-Johnson?
Yeah.
When he was first cast, I thought, nah, I don't know. It. But, yeah, see, when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, okay then.
Yeah,
okay,
then. I think it looks sick.
Yeah.
As soon as Anna was able to walk, her mother started teaching her how to survive a harsh, solitary life in the northern woods. Living in such an extremely remote and dangerous area required skill and resilience. When sunlight became too dim for productive activities, they would take refuge in their house, a sturdy old cabin constructed to resist the toughest winters. Close to the hearth's warmth, Anna would rest in her mother's arms, surrounded by the few wooden toys and masks she had crafted for her. Drifting off to sleep with stories and lullabies, she dreamt happy dreams, ignorant of the events that would soon change everything. Anna and her mother were stalking a great elk through the woods. They knew it was dangerous prey, but it had been a particularly difficult winter and they were almost out of food. The spectre of starvation frightened them more than any forest creature. Without warning, the elk reared, bellowed, and charged at Anna. She was paralysed with fear, as the whole world seemed to shake under the immense beast's pounding hooves. The elk was close enough for Anna to see the murderous fury in its eyes when her mother threw herself in its path, axe in hand. A blood-curdling scream escaped from her lips as the elk impaled her upon its antlers and hoisted her in the air. With all her strength, she brought her axe down on its head again and again while it tried to shake her loose. With a sickening crack, the antlers snapped and Anna's mother was free. The beast collapsed. Anna was too small to move her mother's broken body, so she sat with her in the clearing where she had fallen. To distract her from the dying elk's cries, Anna's mother held her and hummed her favourite lullaby. They stayed like that, the huntress and the elk, getting quieter and colder until Anna was alone in the silent forest. Eventually she stood up and started the long walk back home. Still a child, she knew just enough about life in the frozen forest to survive. She followed her instincts and became one with the wild. She got older and stronger and practiced her hunt. As she grew into a dangerous predator, her humanity became a half-remembered dream. She widened her territory and lived off her hunts. She worked her way up through squirrels, hares, mink, and foxes. Eventually, she grew tired of them and hunted more dangerous animals like wolves and bears. When unsuspected travellers came through her woods, she discovered her new favourite prey, humans. Unlucky souls who strayed into her territory were slaughtered like any other animal. She liked to collect their tools and colourful garments, and especially toys, when they were little ones. But she could never bring herself to kill the little girls. Girls she would take back to her house deep in the woods, they were precious, and looking at them woke something deep in her heart. She craved the closeness of a loved one, a child of her own. Among the pillaged wooden toys, dolls and storybooks she couldn't read, the girls were to be tied by the neck with a rough and chafing rope fastened firmly to the wall. She couldn't let them wander off or they would surely die outside. Every time the girls would waste away and die of cold or starvation or sickness. Every time it plunged Anna deeper into pain and sorrow and madness. She was compelled to try again and started raiding the nearest villages to slaughter families and kidnap their daughters.
Jesus.
She wore one of the animal's masks her mother crafted for her so many years earlier to try and calm the frightened children. Villagers spread the legend of a half-beast lurking in Red Forest, the Huntress, who killed men and ate little girls. War eventually came to the forest. German soldiers began to pass through on the march to attack the collapsed collapsing Russian Empire. During these dark times, there were no more travellers. The villagers had abandoned their homes and no more little ones to be found. Only soldiers, many of them were found with violent axe wounds. Whole groups disappeared mysteriously. Once the war was over, the rumours of the Huntress disappeared with it, engulfed by the Red Forest.
Oh, that's pretty cool. She's like a cross between, like, Craven the Hunter,
Jason,
and Mumma. You remember that shit horror film?
Yeah.
She's like a cross between the three of them.
Yeah, big time.
But the positive, she killed Nazis. You know, Everclad.
Everclad. I mean, she did just slaughter families and take the daughters, kids, and then they died anyway. But, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
Obviously, from the lore, her main weapon is a broad axe. The broad axe is the primary weapon of the Huntress, a traditional axe with a large and heavy head suitable for squaring logs and planks. And her power were hunting hatchets. She could throw these. A skill taught by her mother and mastered in the wild, the Huntress could throw hatchets with deadly precision. I think she only gets like 5.
Ah, right, so. Yeah, so.
And then, yeah, she used them as like, as, you know, like how you use a gun.
Well, yeah. I know what you mean, though.
Yeah. But no, that was one of the best ones.
How long? Should we just do a couple more? I'll do one and then you do the big guy?
Yeah, can do.
Yeah. All right. So
if people like this, we'll go into more with some of the others.
With some of the others, yeah. Right, so the next one is Amanda Young, or the pig. At first, I actually believed it was a pig that slept in front of me on the ground. An animal that somehow had eluded the banalities?
Yeah.
Banalities of my old life, and managed to end up in this forsaken... My mind. I saw Forsaken, but because I was quickly glancing, I genuinely thought it said foreskin. Ended up at this forsaken and forgotten place. But then it rose from crouched to standing. With its lifeless eyes nailed to my person, I ran, as I have so brutally learned to do. My curiosity halted my escape after a few feet and I hid in a cabinet. The pig moved like a predator, and I saw a human body wearing a pig's head as an ornament. It walked by the cabinet with its snout just a few inches away from me. I held my breath, aching, arching for freedom. A sudden sound caught the pig's attention, and it walked away, but not without giving me a last final glance, as if it wanted to inform me that I was given a second chance. I will not get a third. Big up pig in the gaff. Absolutely fat. Okay. Oh shit.
What?
It's actually to do with Jigsaw. Oh. If you've seen the Saw films, you know, like when they kidnap people,
we can't do this one then.
Nah. But where they wear pigs' heads and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, we can't do this.
Oh yeah. How did I not click Amanda Young?
Oh, yeah.
How did I not fucking click? For fuck's sake.
It's been a long week.
Yeah, let me try and find another. All right, we'll try this one.
Which one?
Rin.
No.
No?
No.
Fuck you, Rin. Oh, fuck it, just go on to Big Boy.
I'll do Blight.
Blight?
Blight's cool.
Blight? Blighty. What's Blight? The other way, wasn't it? Here we go.
Yeah, he looks cool though.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. All right. So the penultimate one is Talbot Grimes, the Blight. Okay. He hasn't actually got one of them little speaky bits.
No, neither does the one I'm going to be doing.
Okay. So let's just go to his lore. To understand the human condition, one must rise above it. This was the credo of Talbot Grimes, a Scottish chemist whose unrestrained ambition took him to towering heights. As a boy, he was a popular child, bright, charismatic, and unafraid to challenge authority. Yet despite his social graces, he was fiercely independent, spending much of his time exploring and sprawling the sprawling fields near his town alone. What began as a child's curiosity nearly turned deadly after experimenting with a patch of poisonous foxglove. For days, he laid in bed, dripping with sweat, purging any food that touched his stomach. When he recovered, it wasn't fear that gripped him, but fascination. There was something magical in how a single flower could drastically affect him. Into his adult years, his ambition developed as quickly as his questionable methods. He attended the London School of Medicine and excelled despite several reprimands. His willingness to push the limit secured him a position at the British East India Company, and with 7 years, he was made a head chemist. In time, he completed one of his greatest achievements, a chemical that could increase a worker's productivity while reducing their need to rest. He was rewarded with a secret laboratory beneath a prison camp on Dyer Island. There, off to the coast of India, prisoners from the Opium War became his unwilling subjects, leading to a drug that allowed soldiers to withstand incredible amounts of pain. Though most side effects were minor, there were rumours that a small number of soldiers went mad. In feral states, they massacred villagers, impaling the populace on bayonets, leaving them hanging from trees. There was no official reports on this subject, and Talbot refused to blame himself for what he could only be for what could only be exaggerated war stories. Though his callous brilliance seemed unflappable, he was ignorant to his enemies. His questionable work had amassed. The realization struck him quite literally. With a steel pipe to the back of his head during a trip to Mangalore, he was bound and loaded into a wagon. When his blindfold was removed, a sickly man showed him a mass grave filled with hundreds of bodies. Unbeknownst to Talbot, his productivity increasing drug had killed nearly an entire factory's worth of workers. He knew he couldn't defend himself against the anger and accusations of his abductor. All he could do was curl up as the blows from the steel pipe rained down. His body was thrown into the grave and left for dead. Shifting between consciousness and the darkest black, he crawled for an escape. Fingers sinking into the rotten flesh, back flies feasted on his uncovered skin, the sensation of 100 pinpricks stabbing into him. As he collapsed, he came face to face with a dead woman's dazzling hazel eyes. Too weak to pull away, he could do nothing but witness his life's work. Then, from the edge of death, he was brought back. He found himself on a small bed as a kindly, wrinkled face looked over him. With each pained breath, he was nursed back to health in an ancient mystery school, posing as a monastery. In verdant gardens, behind tall, unassuming walls, monks studied forbidden texts, striving to expand the human mind in the search for other dimensions, believing one to be connected to the other. Talbot's knowledge proved indispensable, his mind-altering chemicals integrating seamlessly with theories of neural expansion. He realized then that his salvation was no coincidence. He was plucked from the pit, specifically to advance the school's knowledge. He agreed to help until his recovery was complete, being tasked with researching what the monks called the soul chemical, a compound delivered from the pineal gland that could open the mind's eye. What began as a favour to his saviours soon became an obsession. Poring over the school's archives of lost texts, he uncovered scientific formulas that confirmed previously unthinkable ideas. He dreamt of ushering humankind into a new period of enlightenment. Perhaps then, the nightmares of hundreds of dead factory workers and those two hazel eyes would fade away. As he came closer to a breakthrough, the demeanour of the monks shifted. The gentle smiles they offered were paired with uneasy eyes that quickly darted away when spotted. The polite conversations he was once privy to turned into hushed murmurs. The last thing he would see of the school was the cracked ceiling above his bed, branching like a dendrite through plaster. His next memories were a shattered mosaic of images and sensations, smearing lights, horse hoofs on cobblestones, coarse burlap scratching at his cheeks, and sharp bites into his arm. He awoke ragged and unwashed, splayed on a straw mattress of an opium den. Mind a dense fog, his first thought was of his notes. the only record of his groundbreaking revelations. He searched frantically, scrambling through the dingy basement, pleading aloud for help. The few of the denizens looked up from their hammocks, offering nothing but drug-soaked eyes and a pathetic gaze that soon fell into half slumber. Before he noticed the robbed figure appear behind him, a needle plunged into his arm and the world would disappear once more. Fuck me, this guy's got loads. Awaken again, each time hazing in the last. He tongued at hollow gaps between his teeth. How long, he wondered. A faint memory returned. The soul chemical, his notes, the verge of a breakthrough, a faraway whisper entered his mind. He fumbled like a stone, sharpening it with shaking hands. In the dim light of the den, amongst the catatonic occupants, he carved research from memory onto the walls. He wrote for hours until his fingers bled, moving to the floor, taking in everything the voice whispered, despite his inability to comprehend it. When there was nowhere left to write, he gripped the stone and carved the message into his chest. Stained with blood, he witnessed a miracle appearing before him, a magnificent field of lush orange flowers. The whispered voice beckoned to him, urging him to enter the field and discover worlds and dimensions beyond human comprehension. For a moment, Talbot felt the sense of wonder he possessed as a child. The denizens of the opium den awoke to silence, the dry scent of smoke still lingering in the air. Shambling out of their dug-hazed fog, they found the stone on the floor wet with blood, tiny rivulets coursing through the cracks. As eyes adjusted to the darkened room, the jagged lettering scrawled along its length began to appear. Written over and over without end, there was only one single line. Death is only the beginning. So from the sounds of it, this geezer was a junkie.
Got to that point, didn't I?
Yeah. Fucking hell. Well, his weapon is the Bone Buster. And the Bone Buster is the primary weapon of the Blight. An elegant accessory specially weighted to deliver a deceptively brutal blow. It's sort of like a pickaxe kind of thing. Mm. And his power is Blighted Corruption. Where is it? When Blighted Corruption is fully charged, press the power button to initiate a rush, allowing the Blight to dash forward at great speed. So it just made him quick. Fair enough. Fuck me, I thought that weren't going to win. Just for him to say, yeah, he was a junkie.
By the end of it.
Hell's bells, man.
Poor fuck those, I'm trying to help
him. Yeah, no.
He got beaten up and everything. Well, this next one I'm very excited about.
And it's, it ain't long been out, is it really?
No, I think it's been this month start of this month.
Yeah.
But what I loved about it, he said we're doing like teasers.
Right.
I remember Courtney telling me about it, and I just got right invested in it all. And they was doing like trail cams and everything, and it's in the woods and hearing voices. And I was thinking, well, this sounds like something right up my alley. So, of course, my mind starts wandering, and I'm thinking Skinwalker, Wendigo, something like that. And I'm thinking, oh, they're bringing one of them in. But then it was getting backlash. Like, just from the teasers, because people would say, like, that's disrespectful to, like, Native Americans and stuff.
Right.
Because there's creatures that they don't talk about. Like that.
Makes sense.
So, I don't know if that was their original plan and then changed it to something
what
else,
it is.
To what it is. But I'm actually really pleased they've done it like that, because, again, it's original.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They might have used stuff from
that.
From like,
yeah, they were going with that, but then they flipped it. It was like, nah.
Let's say I could be totally wrong. This could be their.
That this was what they were aiming for in the first place.
Yeah. But it was just like, in the woods, hearing voices.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a calling card.
Yeah.
Especially for them, for Skinwalkers and Wendigos.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about the unknown. And again, it ain't got one of them speech marks.
No.
This has got quite a long lore. And the look of it is just unbelievable. Fucked. It is fucked. But unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, 100%.
The originality of it, I think, is incredible. And if you haven't, you want to see it in the loading screen.
Right.
It's creepy as fuck. Because it, like, it's, I've shown you it, now, where it drops down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it starts doing that weird crawl thing, yeah.
Oh, it is mad. Right. The lore. Olivia's master's thesis was on urban legends and their origins. She believed they shared similarities with traditional folklore and picked one to illustrate her point. The unknown was believed to be a mysterious evil so heinous that investigating it almost immediately invited death. At least that was how the story went. And there were many stories. One story was of a woman in Greenville who disappeared without a trace on stage in front of a room full of her witnesses. Her friend disappeared weeks later while trying to investigate what happened. This is actually to do with two of the survivors.
All right, yeah.
That bit, anyway.
Yeah.
Whoa, that was your drink.
No, it's not, it's empty.
Oh, it's all right. Oh, fucking hell. I'd have got a swift right hand then. Mother!
Nigga!
I wouldn't have said that.
Well, no. But you. Why would you have said it? If
I don't know. I just got to make a point clear that I wouldn't say it.
It would. Can confirm.
The police were stumped. They had no clues or leads. And that mystery created the perfect storm for amplifying and spreading an urban legend. Instead of going back home for spring break, Olivia headed to Greenville to investigate. She drove to the second cheapest motel in town and began to set up in a small room that smelled of cigarette smoke, mould and booze. She turned one wall into a kind of evidence board. She taped up articles of various theories on similar disappearances attributed to the unknown throughout the country. She made connections with red string and yellow thumbtacks. Anyone walking into the motel room would think she had lost her mind. There were many theories as to the unknown's origin. Some said it was a malevolent entity conjured long ago by an ancient cult. Others believed it to be an alien that escaped from Area 51. Legend was it thrived in darkness and stole the voices of those it consumed so as to lure others into their doom. The first newspaper articles Olivia found referenced the disappearance of at a séance held in the 1800s. In the late 1950s, several college students mysteriously disappeared from a movie theatre. Witnesses saw them go inside. Some remembered seeing them in their seats, but when the lights came up, they were gone. No one saw them leave. No trace of them was ever found. A projectionist claimed to have heard voices in the empty darkness of the theatre later that night, but when he turned on the lights, no one was there. In the 1960s, a group of teens disappeared while exploring an abandoned hospital they believed to be haunted. Stories of speculation arose to explain these mystifying disappearances. Some talked about a top-secret government research program run by the Office of Strategic Services in the 1950s. Project Apple Pie. Mind control experiments using hallucinogenic drugs. Most of the records were destroyed in the 70s, but witnesses claim that experiments were performed on unsuspecting civilians in various settlings and locations throughout the country, including movie theaters, hospitals, and universities. Many believe these unethical experiments opened doorways to other dimensions which allowed evil things to enter the world. Olivia wrote observations to pin to her evidence board. The unknown dwells in darkness and can mimic its victims. Was it an evil entity, an extraterrestrial, a failed government experiment, or just a garden variety serial killer allergic to publicity? She wanted to prove the unknown was nothing more than modern-day folklore, and that investigation led here to this night, to this place, to this shabby motel room. Yet she couldn't help but notice that the disappearances in Greenville included one detail that other stories didn't: the fog. And she half remembered another urban legend with a thick, unnatural fog that somehow made people disappear. Maybe she mused the Greenville disappearances didn't relate to the unknown, but some other darkness. For a moment, Olivia wondered what would happen if one urban legend encountered another. She laughed at the idea and tempted fate by sketching a picture of what she thought the unknown might look like. And she pinned the sketch right in the middle of her evidence board. Laughed nervously, she waited to be consumed by the unknown for having tried to define it. Anxiously, she stared at the windows and front door for seconds that turned into minutes, and minutes that turned into hours. But nothing happened. Now it was after 2 a.m. and Olivia was exhausted as she examined the articles and sipped cold coffee. So when she first heard the whisper, she wondered if she imagined it. Olivia. It seemed to come from the bathroom. Help. The lights in the room flickered. Who's there? Olivia stared with wide eyes at the closed door of the bathroom. Her mind was playing tricks on her, or her friends had shown up to prank her. Aurelia, Sean, stop messing around. The lights continued to flicker as she edged closer to the bathroom. Fear spread in long ways through her, and a terrible realization bloomed within her that the unknown was behind the bathroom door, was preparing to make her pay for her hubris. Something began to whisper her name again, but then the voice rose, cracked, and distorted in sudden panic, as if the brooding creature behind the door were under attack. An unknown horror filled Olivia's heart and let... Hang on. Oh, core app's burning. Hang on, am I going to go again? No, I think I'm good. An unknown horror hurt... Hang on.
No, yeah.
An unknown horror filled Olivia's heart and left room for nothing else. She breathed deeply as cold sweat beaded on her forehead. She placed her hand on the doorknob. The lights turned off, but she could still hear the strangely inhuman cries. Then the lights turned back on, and she could see a strange black fog seeping through the bottom of the door. Hesitantly, Olivia creaked the door open to see a bulky shape with frenzied tentacles being pulled into a thick mass of fog, vanishing slowly into the darkness like a dying shadow. The shriek had stopped suddenly. Neighbours banged on the wall to turn down the TV, and Olivia stared intently at the black abyss that yawned before her. She wasn't sure what to do. Part of her wanted to run, but the other part wanted to know more. And as she considered what to do next, dozens of voices began to call out to her with promises of the unknown and the impossible and end of unearthly things beyond human experience.
Yeah, he got the best one. He's got the best one. And again, I know clues in the name unknown, but I love that you don't know. Do you know what I mean? Is it a scientific experiment? Is it an alien?
I want to say it's an urban legend.
Yeah.
That's what I'll...
Yeah.
But no, I just think... gets me all giddy. But yeah, please look at it, because he looks fucked.
Yeah.
His weapon is a gently used axe. The gently used axe is the primary weapon of the unknown. Even its victims' belongings would disappear, with no sign of where they could have gone. And his power is UVX. Some believe the specimen was recovered by the military for their experiments. The codename, Unknown Venom X. It's like a projectile, I think.
Right.
But yeah, I think... Also, like, we haven't really gone into it, but a lot of the killers have something called a Mori.
Right.
Which, it's the only... Because a lot of the time, when if you don't know the game, you're doing these generators.
Mm-hmm.
The killer will hit you once, and you get you're weakened and you start limping. He'll hit you again, and you go down, you're crawling.
Yeah.
That point, he can pick you up.
Oh, yeah.
And put you on a hook.
Yeah.
And then... The first time, you can usually get off it. The second time, like, these spider things come down and you hold it off.
Yeah, until someone else can come and get you off the hook.
But the third time, you're on the hook.
You're done for.
It kills you.
Yeah.
So, and as well, but the Mori is... it's like a killing move. Right. You know, like a finishing.
Yeah, 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 combat. Yeah.
It's kind of like that. And they've all got their own special ones. The Unknown's one is you're on the ground. It drops down on like on all fours and it crawls to you. And then it has these tentacles that come out of its back. And it's got like a mouth on its back. And its tentacles come out. And that's and it takes away your voice. And it kills you. But it takes away your voice. And that's how then it can use the voice.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want to see it. Honestly, it looks like he's been put in a threshing machine. He's twisted up and everything. But no, I think he looks sick.
Yeah.
I think he's my favourite killer. But also, I quite like the Hag.
Yeah.
And Blight's design is cool.
Yeah.
There's another one we spoke about, Deathslinger. He's pretty cool.
Mm.
But I think Hillbilly. Hillbilly's one of my favourites.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well, for obvious reasons. But no, I think he is really cool.
Yeah.
And like the thought, like, because before, like, when, before Texas Chainsaw Massacre and everything got put into it, I just thought it's like, oh, it's a bit of an homage to it.
Yeah. See, I'd say I'm not too sure on the design, but I think the Huntress would be my favourite. Just not the design of it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I think she's creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Because as she's walking, she hums.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and she's like humming a lullaby.
Yeah.
And that is really eerie.
Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit fun. But no, let us know which one's your favourite. Yeah. And if you play the game, you know, which one is your favourite to use? Do you know what I mean? Because obviously, I'm pretty sure some you are going to prefer some to the others.
Mm. So. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I imagine like some of them, because like, Courtney mainly plays Survivor.
Right.
She's got her group, her little clique.
Yeah.
Her group of friends. And they're always like playing Survivor. Sometimes if they're not all playing it, won't she turn code as killer? Yeah. But she, I don't know. I don't know really. She used to play Michael a lot, like Michael Myers a lot, but I don't know who she does now.
Nah.
But, I don't know where I was going with this. But no, actually, yeah, I do. Because I think if you play a Survivor a lot of the time, you'll get like killers who you think, oh, I hate them because of how difficult they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got some who are like your favourite because you can
fuck them up a bit. You know yeah, I mean? Exactly.
But no, I think, yeah, they are sick.
Yeah.
Let's say that first three, I really hope they redo the lore.
Yeah, or just add to it. Yeah, just, yeah. You can definitely tell, obviously, they were the first. They weren't really putting too much effort in.
No. Because
as well, it's the case of they didn't know how well the game was going to go. No, so why would you put in so much effort if the game's just dead?
For a game that is, in reality, quite simple.
Yeah.
It is took off. The maps as well. Some of the maps are so cool.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the killers, I'm not saying all, I don't think all of them, but most of the killers have their own map.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really, really cool.
So, I mean, they've gone a lot more. The more the game's gotten more well-known,
a
lot more detail they've put into it. God, so it's fair play.
It's so cool. And like, they've got original Survivors. They've also got movie Survivors.
Yeah.
Because I think that famous one is they got the Demogorgon from Stranger Things. Yeah. And they've also got Steve and Nancy.
Oh, mad.
Survivor. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with it next.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Because at the minute, I think it says they got 35 killers.
That's fucking mad.
Like, there's got to be a point where they're like, yeah, we've had enough. Now.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need any more. But then, I don't know. There is only so many ideas you could do.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what would be cool. Like a werewolf kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be pretty sick.
Or like a vampire or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think they might already have something similar to it, but yeah, I think that'd be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Nah.
But, I think that about wraps it up, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, because it's quite a long.
I think it might be. But no, thank you very much for watching. Be sure to subscribe, like, hit the bell, all that good stuff.
Yep.
Be sure to check out all of our social medias.
Yep.
Be sure to check out the podcast on various podcast platforms. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much for watching. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Happy hunting.